This past week was very strange for me. My kids were gone the whole week. My wife was gone from Tuesday, so I had a solid 4.5 days by myself. I caught myself, like, talking to myself in the kitchen a lot. I'm used to having people around and noise and things like that. I became a little nocturnal, as is my natural state. I don't know why we have church in the morning. It's just still 10 o'clock is still pretty early for me, as most of you know. It was also a strange week because it was my last week in the office, so I spent all my time, you know, cleaning up old files and finding weird old stuff and recycling it or throwing it away or keeping it or, I don't know. I kept very little for your junk basket, Micah. That's at home mostly. He's got a junk basket. It's a long story. It doesn't matter. So it was a strange week for me. So to create a sense of normalcy, I did what any reasonable person would do, and I started making spreadsheets. Because it's not comfort food. It's like comfort activity. I don't know. It's the thing that I do to help make myself whole. And then I analyze them a little bit, and I'm basically making stuff up. But I enjoy it. So, did you know that since 2009, I came here in October of 2009, since 2009, this congregation has officially welcomed 93 new members. I thought it was 92, but then it was me too, so I had to add the one and change all my spreadsheets. Just this morning I remembered that. So the numbers changed, because I'm like that. Just because I like making spreadsheets doesn't mean I'm good at it. Of these 93 new people, 39 were children, 25 were people in their 20s and 30s, 11 in their 40s and 50s, and 18 of those folks were 60 or older, by my math. Around 40% of these folks became members through baptism, so were baptized in that time. Around 40% had family who were already members of this church, and that's why they came here. A lot of them were children born into that sort of thing. Nearly three-quarters of our new members were Lutheran before they came here, or their families were. And about half of those new members since 2009 are still here. About half of them have gone. 30% moved away, 15% never were going to stay here. It was like, you know, people who had their grandkids come and get baptized here from Kansas or whatever, things like that. You have some of those things. About half of the folks who have left just sort of decided that this church wasn't the place for them, or their parents decided that because they were kids, something like that, or some other reason that I don't know about. Like I said, spreadsheets. This is what I do for fun. We also, in the boring, we have a category of people called active participants. So it's like not necessarily like actual members, but people who are active in the life of the church. There are some members who are not really active, and there are lots of people who are not members officially, but are active in the life of the church. Of those, just about half of them, based on the 2017 reporting numbers, boring, just about half of our active participants last year are new since 2009. Did you know that? Half of the people active in this congregation are new here since 2009. I was a little surprised to find that out. And similarly, in terms of official membership, 47% of official members are newly members since 2009. All of which is to say that this congregation has changed a lot in those years. New people bring new ideas, new experiences, new pet peeves, I assume. Now around 30% of the membership of this church are children at the current time. There's a lot that has changed in these years. And that's had something to do with me, but it's had a lot more to do with you all. And I want to thank you. Those of you who have been there before I came and are here after I left, congratulations to you as well. I don't know if you won a contest or what. Some of you, I'm sure, were just waiting me out. And it's very nice that you've been polite about that. We should have an actual sermon today, so I think I'll do that now. Just wanted you to know. I did all this fun spreadsheet stuff. I thought people should know this. It's useful. Maybe. I don't, you could make it useful. I can't really make it useful anymore, but you could in the future. Because you know, like, what the church has been, and it's not just whatever it is in your head, but it's that plus the actual numbers to say this is who we are and this is what we've done. So, actual sermon. I want to talk about, well, I'm a little nervous. The gospel lesson kind of threw me off when it talks about how prophets are not, nobody likes them in their hometown, and I'm moving back to Minnesota where I'm from, so it's kind of an ill omen for me. Not really, it's not an omen, I don't believe in that kind of thing, but it's funny. But I'm not going to talk too much about that. Instead, I want to talk about Paul's letter to the Corinthians that we heard today. This particular section toward the end is very famous and theologically powerful. It was one of the theme verses from one of the years I worked at Bible camp back 15 or 20 years ago. This part where it says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness." God says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness." Paul goes on to say, "So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong." Even in Paul's time, this was a message that could be described as countercultural. The human experience is generally one of trying to attain and then maintain power over other people. That's kind of what we do as people, and that leads to the politics we have now and the national structures we have and the wars and violence and bigotry and all the things, because people are trying to have power over others. They're trying to find other people they can be better than. Is a huge part of the human experience. I read an article this week by, I guess he calls himself a cultural critic, named Charles Mudede, who's a Zimbabwean-American guy living in Seattle. He's definitely anti-religious, so I'll just put that out there. I think he would be insulted if I quoted him in a sermon and didn't point out that he's against religion. But Mudede was writing about what it means to be a human being. He had seen a music video that included like people running nude through the woods. And he was reflecting on sort of the ridiculousness of that, like how ridiculous human bodies look running naked through the woods, right? They don't have hair like animals. They don't have horns or fangs or anything to protect them. They just look totally vulnerable. This is the part where you picture somebody running naked through the woods and how vulnerable they look. Isn't that a fun thing to do in a sermon? I didn't actually watch the video. I got the gist. As it happens. So Mudede writes, "The human out of the womb is not that far from the humans walking through those woods. No sharp teeth, no claws, no natural weapons. Could you imagine if humans had venom in their saliva? We would be a completely different animal." He goes on, "Few things are as exposed as the human. My theory," he says, is that it is this weakness that is the source of our power, which is social. It's counterintuitive, but it seems that the weaker you are, then the more dependent you are on others. This dependency increases rather than decreases our species' power, which is universal rather than particular." End quote. So Mudede is not strictly saying the same thing Paul is, but he's making the same basic point, that when you look at the vulnerability and the weakness of humans, there you can see the true strength of humanity. Because the true strength of humanity is humans together, is recognizing our vulnerability, and then banding together, working together to create the conditions that we need for our lives to flourish. We're all very familiar with the sort of myth of the individual who makes themselves and who is the big hero. I mean, most movies we have are about an individual hero. Most stories we have historically are about the individual hero who overcomes the odds, who becomes exceptional. It's a common human story. But even the most popular movies nowadays are about when these superheroes team up together and they all show up in the same movie. And even superheroes realize that they are more powerful when they are together, that they alone are insufficient to meet the world's needs. It's ultimately the same message that Paul is preaching today. It's the message of we need each other. We need to see our vulnerabilities, to look them in the eyes, to recognize ourselves for what we really are, not for what we wish we were or for what superheroes are or whatever else. As human beings, we need one another. This is a great time to recognize that in the life of this congregation. As the pastor is leaving, you all need one another. You need to stick together. If everybody fragments or starts getting little factions or groups or whatever drama, that's going to do nobody any good. It's going to do the gospel no good. Now, Paul, when he was writing to the Corinthians, was struggling with a somewhat similar situation. Some people had come in who basically said they were better than everybody else. Paul refers to them as the super apostles because they think they're so great. And he says that to make fun of them, obviously. When Paul talks about his own weakness, he says, look, I'm not like the perfect Christian like those people. He says, I have this thorn in my flesh. I don't even know what he's talking about, but it seems weird and kind of creepy. And I think that's the point. Paul is saying, I'm far from perfect, he says. And yet Paul had founded this church. He had done so much for them. He said, it's not about being perfect. It's not about being the best. There's no prize for being the best Christian, for being the best follower of Jesus. The prize is really in everybody being together, in everybody sharing in the grace of God, in everybody sharing God's love with one another in the church and outside the church, with everybody who has need. Paul wrote that he's content with his weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities, which is a pretty great list, for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong. When it comes to the individual level, Paul recognized this universal human truth, that weakness and vulnerability are the source of our strength. If the church isn't a place where we can be honest about our weaknesses and our vulnerabilities, then what is the church? What is its value? This is a question I struggle with. Because even in the church, you know, we want to be the best. I mean, I'm the pastor. I get to stand up here and say whatever I want. And you sit there and generally politely nod through it or doze off or whatever you need to do. But I get to do that, right? That kind of thing can go to my head, and some of you know this very well. And it's important for me to recognize that my strength is not in me or what I do or what I've accomplished or my talents or anything else. My strength, as the pastor, is in you, the church. As a pastor, I'm only anything because of you. If I show up on Sunday morning, if nobody else shows up, I can't complain. You're here voluntarily. You're here because you want to be. No one person makes the church go. Certainly not the pastor. Some of you know that very well. And not any other individual either. Jesus is an individual for whom some of these things don't necessarily apply. Jesus is an individual that had a different experience, and he matters in a different way than the other individuals. But look how Jesus accomplished what he did. Look how Jesus approached salvation. He didn't do it by becoming the biggest, strongest guy, by being the superhero. Jesus did it by becoming weak, by becoming vulnerable. Jesus saved the world, we believe, not through strength, but through weakness, by dying. Because Jesus knew that God's love and God's power are stronger than any human power, are stronger even than death, are stronger than any natural thing, are stronger than sin, stronger than what we can do to each other or what is done to us. God's love is stronger than any of that. That's why Jesus came. That's why Jesus died. And that's why Jesus rose again. Because as Paul said about himself, Jesus' power was made perfect in weakness. When we gather as the church, we need to recognize that our strength is in our unity. It's in our community. It's in our togetherness. And our unity is in Christ, who lived and died and rose again for us, so that we could be set free from the power of sin and death, free to love God and to love and serve one another. Amen.